Hello and welcome to the Label Sessions Presents podcast. Label Sessions is the world's leading innovation expert network. In this series, you will meet some of the most interesting leaders anywhere, from across the worlds of business, design, tech, culture, and sustainability, all signed to the Label Sessions roster. To find out more about our work, helping brands and institutions around the world take on their big challenges for the future, head to labelsessions.com to find out more. For now, enjoy the podcast. First of all, Max, welcome to Label Sessions. Do you want to introduce yourself? You've got an interesting story, because right now, if I look on LinkedIn, it says, a partnership leader. In the past, you've been involved in wine, all kinds of different things. So why don't we just give yourself like a little, 10-second intro to you
first. Yeah, so my name is Max, and I'm based in Toronto. Right now in Canada. And I think I follow, to your point, a slightly unconventional career path. A lot of people ask me, like, how did I get into this job? And my answer is, I have no idea. So the wine business kind of started as an initiative while I was doing my undergrad education in France. And I was trying a lot of wine in France that my parents couldn't get here in Canada, or at least in Toronto, Canada. And so I decided one summer, like, let's just do this. We did not know anything about wine. We never spent any time in food and hospitality industries. My whole family is all computer science, finance. And we just did it. And 16 years, we did that for 16 years. And that was always a passion side project for me and my dad. And in parallel, I actually was starting my real career in like the financial side of space. And so I did a little bit of work at startups, did a little bit of work in consulting, did a little bit of work at, you know, big companies owned by banks. And now I'm in this partnerships role in the financial services space.
Okay, really interesting. And before, we're going to go focus mostly on the partnership role in financial services. But I just wanted to speak briefly. You went to France as a Canadian and set up a wine business. Did that feel like a gutsy thing to do at the start, or did it feel like a natural thing to do? And how did you find that whole process?
So I actually started a wine business in Toronto. The goal was to import wine from France and from Europe into Canada. And naively, I thought, this is easy. And then I found a lot of, the regulations kicked in, all the laws and Canada's, we're not going to talk about it too much, but the Canadian liquor controls are slightly insane.
People don't understand that in the rest of the world, this whole thing about being licensed to bring something in through the government in each individual state. It's there's a whole different podcast on that, but it's like there are things about Canada sometimes are very unusual in their most their beautiful way. Excellent. Okay, but actually interesting. Okay, so actually the wine side project thing does take you into dealing with regulation, the global nature of a business like that, the kind of detail about how you actually make things happen, which I guess is pretty core to your role as a partnerships leader in Canada now. I mean, are there some links or are things?
Kind of. I'd say yes to a certain degree, because as part of the regulations, there's also the component of like the legal structure for how to set it all up properly. And that actually really was helpful for me when I was doing this, my stint at the startup. So I spent 2 years at a startup here based in Toronto. They were doing a global SIM card roaming solution. And so as part of that initiative, that also has, like, telecom is also highly regulated across the world. So actually, if you Google my name, you'll still probably see some of my signatures in front of the FCC documentation I've yet to put in the US. So that was interesting to figure out. But that also, like, helped me, like, figure out how to set up a global structure to operate that entity. So, like, we opened up a company in, like, Hong Kong, and then Singapore, and then in the UK. So how do you set up all of that legal structure to support the business?
Okay, so let's bring it up today. So now you're a partnerships leader within Xero, focused on the Canadian market. It's an interesting, fascinating job. A lot of people might not understand what a partnership leader actually does. So it's interesting for a second just to go through. What does your day-to-day look like? How do you operate as a partnerships leader?
So each day is unique. There's no set, like, it's not like I wake up every morning and I know, like, you know, I don't know my schedule, so... depending on the initiative and the project. So for example, I'm working closely with the big five Canadian banks on data exchange and sharing between the bank and the company I work for right now, which is an accounting platform. And so the premise is, like, that's not really the bank's data. So there's still this mindset in Canadian banking, especially, is that it's the bank's data. The transactions that are in the account, the money in, money out, a lot of banks still think it's their data. In reality, and it's not fully defined in regulation yet in Canada. Open banking is still a thing that's still floating through. the process. But in reality, that is the client's data. So the small business owner's data, that's frankly what it is. And so in order for, you know, the business to operate and be successful, they need to get a view of that. The cash flow forecast, you know, all of the compliance and regulations that they'd have to meet to be a business in Canada. And so my biggest aspect of my job is convincing the banks and telling the banks that it's not dangerous to release this data. A, it's not your data. It's not dangerous to release your data. And B, if you don't do it, the client already has another way to do it anyway. So it's not like you're not letting the data flow from the bank to the accounting platform. It happens already. Another big aspect of my job is, of course, to be part of the ecosystem of the fintechs across the world, in Canada and across the world, because fintechs also provide a bunch of services, payments, payroll, budgeting, reporting, staff management, HR systems, all of that. So kind of how to, on the other side, I manage that ecosystem of partners that plug into the accounting platform to service small business.
It's interesting, this whole area of open banking. So I'm speaking here from the UK, where I guess things have gone forward to some degree, although a lot of people really underestimated how much making the whole thing work relies on partnerships, relies on attitudes to data, relies on like the whole sort of set of both governance structures, detailed design, cultural shifts that go on. It's interesting in terms of how much of what you do, if you like, is focused on a technology challenge, and how much do you think is focused on influencing people and the way institutions think?
I'd say depends on the institution. So I have a spectrum of, I'll just focus on the big banks, although the long tail of smaller banks, and we have what we call credit unions in Canada, which are like, more specific banking service providers. So just focusing on the big banks, I could do like a draw on a line. I could say most progressive mindset here and then least progressive mindset here. So even across the five, there is that spectrum. In the least progressive mindset, and it's really focusing on how do I work with the people and change that, fix that mindset, versus in many cases, the most progressive mindsets are hampered by technology limitations. So in this side, it's really often working through how do we help that bank exchange the data or release the data, because they have gaps in their capabilities.
Yeah, okay. The actual detail of how you make these things work in some of the sort of bigger institutions. Is that partly a legacy issue, do you think, or is that just a sort of the pure complexity of doing it at this stage in the story in Canada?
Probably it's a legacy issue. So, you know, for a long time, you know, I don't think banks have replaced the core banking platforms. So at the end of the day, my understanding is that they've layered a lot of innovation on top of core banking platforms, but then at the end of the day, you're still the source of the data still often is one of those more legacy systems. And as well in Canada, because the open banking is, well, frankly, relatively new relative to banking overall, some more progressive regions like the UK as an example, Australia, they've kind of been talking about open banking and have open banking for a while. Canada's still like mid to late stage talking about open banking, not doing open banking. And so because of that, banks have built a lot of capability. Like as an example, all the banks have a mobile app and, you know, they're great. I actually almost never log into my bank account on a browser. I could do like 99% of the stuff on my mobile app. The problem is that the mobile app is deeply integrated and it's not an API thing. It's like still very deeply built into the core infrastructure. So they don't have certain components like a consent module, an authentication module that are key requirements to be able to do open banking.
This is one of the challenges that is totally global, because you're in between the two worlds, which is the fintech world, so that kind of ecosystem you're a part of, and also then banks and financial institutions. What have you seen work in terms of how people start to get genuine partnerships to actually operate and actual thing, projects actually happen beyond it being a kind of talking shop or a kind of nice event?
I think in terms of the most successful one that we have is looking at the partnership not just as a one-way, so bank data leaving bank going to partner, but a two-way street. So where we're most successful is where we agree and see the vision that, you know, yes, some data was going to come to the platform, but then the bank will draw data from the platform back into bank environment. And what's the value of that exchange? So I think that the most successful partnerships are where there is a two-way relationship. Maybe the second path, maybe the phase two of that is the data into the bank, because it's also complicated for the bank. But having that mindset and that conversation does help that relationship and makes it much easier.
It's interesting because a lot of the labs that we are involved with, you can end up Well, quite well intentioned, but you can end up in a very one-sided kind of partnership propositions, I guess, as the bank wanting to do the innovation thing and not really thinking about how the, well, the other side of that might be. And on the flip side, I guess quite often there's a lot of startups or scale-ups who can not realize that there is actually an exchange, that actually it's not just them taking data which is valuable to them, but actually there is a story there that's could be important to the bank, I think, sometimes.
Generally, banks, I find, have only two types of partnerships. In reality, it's either a bank thing and it's owned by the bank or controlled by the bank, or it's a vendor. And the whole world of fintech is neither. They're not a bank thing, they're not owned by the bank, and they're not a vendor, because the definition of a vendor to a bank is very much like, I'm going to give you bank data, you're going to do something with this bank data, and I have full oversight control of how you do it and what you do, and oftentimes I require you to give me the results back. So it's kind of this fintech relationship is a interesting thing. And I get more into, this is more of a technical aspect of the relationship, because, you know, at the business level, like, people understand. But when you get into the depths of working with a bank, you get the whole gamut of, you know, security, regulation, privacy, contracting, all of that. And often at this gamut, this is where the concept of vendor comes in over and over again. And a big challenge for me, not challenge, but a big aspect of my role is actually working with all of these teams to, like, repeat. It's like repeat. Like, we're not a vendor. We're not a vendor. We're not a vendor.
but that is your learning. If you like, the way to do it is to just keep telling them that this is not the way we're set up. Like, you have to just keep, or you have to try and sort of drill into people's minds
as much as I can. But realistically, I think the goal, the skill there is being able to plug in a non-vendor response into a vendor.
Yes, that's the tough thing. Because also there's a hard thing here, which is lots of people in technology functions, and especially procurement functions, are trained in how to manage vendors, but they're not trained in how to do partnerships. There's like there's hard skills in there, as well as the kind of soft skill collaboration. And let's talk about the next bit of your time, I guess, in terms of being a partnership leader, which is there's a complex but fascinating story there as to how you get different, you know, players to play together. And the next thing that then happens is there's some new regulation that comes out, especially in your kind of space of open banking. I mean, how do you see that as a leader in this kind of space? Do you kind of think, oh no, it's a new thing, panic, it's just purely a setback? Or do you sometimes see them as opportunities?
Right now, I'm very closely, the company I work for, and I'm personally very closely aligned with the push to get open banking in Canada faster. So, you know, I collaborate across the industry with other fintechs in Canada, across Canada, to push open banking however we can. So we're part of some groupings of fintechs that are, you know, pushing for that to go forward. And so we're looking forward to it. And, you know, regulations change all the time. Also things like that you may not think of, like, let's go out of open banking. Let's talk about just a banking regulator. The banking regulator could come out with a new set of requirements for data exchange, and that could come out of a left field. And I have no idea that it's coming until it lands. So had the experience with that as well. And so I think to be successful in a partnerships role, you cannot be scared. You have to be open and, well, like, you know, excited about a change. Don't look at a change as a bad thing.
I always say to people as well, I think in some ways, a regulation is almost required to get big institutions to move at some kind of scale. You need that kind of moment, both of, like, there being an impetus to move, which sometimes it's hard to get going otherwise. And also that kind of sense is interesting. There's a real interesting commercial opportunity for partners in that kind of space. Once in a whole industry has to do something, you can start to change things.
Here's where regulation is very positive for us. Like, as an example, we don't do payment processing in Canada, but we have partners who do. And in Canada, we also have in parallel this payment service provider regulation, that money service business regulation, that is in effect, but fairly new and recent. And so how I found that helpful is, without that, there were a bunch of companies that were kind of doing, you know, this payment stuff, and some in a really good manner and, like, really proper manner. And then there were a bunch of them who probably were not doing it in that same rigor. And so it really clouded the industry for a long time. Like, it was very difficult for somebody to just say, fine, I'll work with you. Or the amount of convincing that those companies had to do to partner with somebody was tremendous. And with regulation, as long as you meet that regulation, all of a sudden you're part of the club, and it's much easier for you to do partnerships. So kind of similar for my company, like with open banking. The reason I have this long tail of negotiations and conversations is because there's no standard. And so I have to convince not just the business people at the bank, but the whole infrastructure of the bank, to your point, procurement people, that we're a good partner, we're not a bad partner.
And there's a related point here as well, which is, in practice, my sense would be, having seen partnership leaders in practice, is that you're both convincing the external partner, but you're also having to convince people inside your own organization as well sometimes, in terms of changes or like work that's going to be required. It can be quite an isolating role in some level, although it's a very social role. I mean, do you find ways of managing that?
I mean, it's very much a matrix work, so it's very much an influencing role internally as well. I have to work with leadership at the executive level, at the country level, legal, our procurement, our IT teams, to make a partnership move forward. And a lot of that is also working with like the product teams of who's going to build that integration. So it's very much an influencing approach. And one of the things that I'm kind of interested in and started to get more rigorous on recently within that big org is, how do we choose the process to choose the right partner? Like, we can't go like, maybe we can do a partnership with all the big five banks, great. But then there's a long tail of them. And like, how do we approach the long tail of them? We're not, probably neither party will have the capacity to do the integration to each other. So how do we creatively work through that? And also in the payment space, like at the company, we've defined the concept of jobs to be done for a small business. And this is really, think about this as a small business owner. What do they have to do on a regular basis to run the business? So things like, they have to have a bank account, they have to have some kind of an accounting platform or some kind of reporting platform. They probably need to accept payments and make payments. They have to do payroll, pay employees, do some kind of payroll stuff. So these are the core jobs to be done. And so in a regional capacity, we needed to find a partner that would do those jobs to be done. And so in some cases, there are hundreds of these companies. In some cases, there is like a handful. So how do we strategically align on which partner we will go after and work with? And, while also allowing others to join, but maybe like, well, why these guys versus those guys? That's the big question that I have to answer.
Have you started to frame that yet? Have you got a sort of sense in your head as to what a good partner looks like?
So we have actually just completed one of the latest version of that initiative, and we've presented a decision. We have a criteria matrix that we've pulled together. I was part of that initiative, and we ran each partner through that criteria, that matrix. It's actually turned out to be like a 70-page deck, which I think is a little bit too excessive, but rigorous.
And also, this is where someone in doing the kind of work you do kind of like switches roles, because quite often you're the partner trying to get someone bigger than you to pay attention and to think about you as a genuine partner rather than a vendor. And then you kind of flip around and you start becoming the bigger partner to someone else. Do you notice things that you do differently as a result of having worn both hats?
It's actually very interesting, because I've recently lived through the experience of having my former boss leave and join one of those partners. It's interesting to have that like pendulum a little bit. To your point, it is, I try to be as open and honest about that, but also helping that individual realize that the balance of power as well has now shifted a little bit. So like that's a challenge. And I mean, especially when you come to the long tail, let's talk about long tails. Like, there's the long tail of any industry. In banking, in payments, there's a bunch of partners out there. And everybody kind of comes to us as the big party here and expects to join the ecosystem and all of a sudden get a lot of clients through the ecosystem. Like, we're not, unless we have decided, the company I work for, the philosophy is, unless we've decided that you're going to be our strategic partner and we actually dedicate a team to work with you, you're not really a strategic partner. Mm-hmm. So a lot of that relationship management is, come work with us, but please make sure your expectations are correct, not overambitious.
That's really interesting. Let's move on slightly, because I think one of the really interesting things where areas of innovation just now is more directly around support for small business, so services and platforms for small business. And in particular, this issue around data, which has become, if you like, it's kind of moved from something that technology types talked about into something that's much a bigger conversation now, in terms of, because of AI partly, but in terms of like whose data is it really? First of all, where do you think there are some opportunities for innovation in terms of support for small business and the way that their data is used better?
To be honest, I think that, at least I'll give the Canada version of it. I was talking to one of our accounting, closely aligned accountant partners here in Canada about a month ago. And this individual said something very interesting. The biggest challenge in terms of innovation is actually the owners of the businesses themselves. So the generational gap. So today there's a lot of small business owners that are not comfortable. They're just not comfortable using a cell phone. Let's just put that on the table. And as that generational shift happens, so often, you know, maybe the business is sold to somebody, or maybe it's, you know, it's inherited by the family member or the kids. We see a big jump in just using technology as one of the biggest barriers to innovation. It's not that the industry requires some kind of innovative new solution. It's just use the internet, just use a cell phone. It's often as simple as that. But realistically, what I've noticed is that, and we have some stats around that, is a business that implements some kind of a business management system, so an accounting platform at the core of it, stays in business longer, tends to stay in business longer, just because they're on top of all of the data. You know, if the data is in on paper on your bank statement, or, you know, an invoice that's on paper, or even an email, you don't have actual access and ability to analyze the data. As soon as you kind of put it all in one system that allows you to log in, and you get one dashboard that says, here's my 30, 60, 90 day forecast, and oh crap, I will not be able to make payroll next month. Knowing that today, then having your employees yell at you for not getting their paychecks is probably better. So it's great table stakes, I guess.
So let's move this forward. So I guess in terms of, you are now interacting with startups in the classic sense, more scale-ups, financial institutions of different sizes. What do you think are some of the different opportunities, or maybe different challenges that different of those organizations face when they think about innovation?
I think if I look at like the pure startup scale-up side of things, it's all about go, 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 build, build, build. And I think the biggest challenge they have and will have, even with regulation, is meeting that regulation. So, and this kind of goes back to what I said earlier around, I don't like to use the word good and bad partner, but in reality, going from a bad, what would be deemed a bad partner, to going to what I would deem to be a good partner. So that's the main challenge for those folks. And from a big bank perspective, the biggest challenge is just their big infrastructure legacy and just the structure of their orgs. So one of the big banks in Canada has what would they call a digital factory, which is effectively a carved out team. They even have a different office location, different everything that was meant to, or the premise of that is to, build some innovative stuff and then put it back into the big bank environment. And so, I mean, they've had some successes coming out of there, but there's also been a lot of just going stuff that just goes nowhere.
In some ways, I sometimes feel, especially in fintech, it can feel like both ends of the spectrum are constrained by totally different things. Because in terms of the great thing that a fintech can have, or a startup can have, is focus. But to your point, sometimes that can mean that sometimes you can not be focusing on something which might be important to you, like regulation. On the flip side, the incredible thing that big banks have is resource. But sometimes the lack of focus can become such a barrier.
And just also the approval process. The bigger the organization, the more people that you probably need to get approval for and buy-in for. So it's a slower moving train. The one thing that baffled me, so I was at a fireside chat about a year ago. I was invited to speak in front of a bunch of, open banking leads across the smaller banks and credit unions in Canada. And I went into that very excited to this conversation, because I really thought that, you know, if you're smaller and more nimble, you'd be more prone to innovation. And disappointingly, actually, I found out that the smaller credit unions are no more inclined or capable of moving faster than the big ones.
I think it does take leadership, right? It does take somebody to be willing to push the agenda and to be relentless in the face of the different barriers that come up. That leads me to, there's one more question before we start to get to know you better, a bit more personally. But there's a lot of people that come through Label Sessions because they've just taken on a partnership leadership role, so they end up asking for mentoring or advice in different ways, and that's partly because I think a lot of people come into that leadership role not by accident, because it's very deliberate on the path, but they didn't necessarily sort of step out as a fresh graduate someday going, that's the job I want to get through. So there's an interesting thing there in terms of, quite often it can feel Like there isn't a lot of advice necessarily for how partnership leaders should actually do this thing. What are some of the best advice you would have in mind for someone who's taking on leadership of a partnership function or starting to develop that area of a business?
I'll give you a little bit of an answer from my career path. So I really transitioned, I really ended up in this kind of role after doing a bit of a stint in like product management. I found that, and that's kind of an advice that I've given, the advice I've given to a few folks as well is, before you can partner successfully, you really need to understand what the problem is and what the product is doing. So having the rigor of product management does help, I think. It's not required, like no job today requires specific path, but I would encourage maybe not do a role in product management, but at least, you know, maybe get attached for 6 months to a product team for a little bit, seconded to a product team for a bit. It does help tremendously just because you kind of get that idea of what is the product and what are the gaps that a partnership can fill. And I think it also helps you kind of define what success looks like faster with a partnership, because it's easy to just say, a partnership could be as simple as a referral. And, you know, you put a referral link somewhere and, you know, you sit there expecting to get a lot of clients coming in, but it's not really, it doesn't stop there. So you kind of have to think about what is your success and success criteria? What does it look like? And also build a roadmap to how to get there, not just put it out there and expect magic to happen.
Yeah. And I can see there's a lot of people who come from a strategy background, which I guess can be quite a big leap when they're then having to get into the hard yards of how things actually click together and how people actually make progress.
Yeah, exactly. I think if you're coming into this from just a pure strategy perspective, I think the difference with pure strategy role and a partnership role in my mind is in partnership, you have to go from high level strategy to execution and like roll up your sleeves and then execute. If your mindset is you only want to do this one strategy side of things and then just lob it over to somebody to execute, probably not, you're not going to see success. In my experience, you just will not see that success.
And just funny, because I'm always interested in this, what's your take or what's your gut feel just now in terms of open banking innovation in Canada? Are you feeling optimistic and excited, or are you feeling like this might be take a lot longer to come through?
When I joined this company in Canada, they, in 22, the government published this report that said, open banking, here's the framework. And they put a date of like January 2023 that was going to be live. So every time people ask me this question, it's like, are we there yet? I think so. but I think given the tailwinds and the industry associations I'm part of and all the data and information I'm getting from there, it sounds like very promising that this year is the year that we will get real movement on open banking in Canada.
And to be fair, that's true. I don't know the detail of it in Australia, but certainly here, there was a whole period where a lot of people were saying they'd launched things that hadn't really launched yet. There was a lot of talk before it then became the real thing that it is.
There's also an education component, because if you go on the street, like I think we've had some of our media here in Canada went on the street and just surveyed people, the business owners, just regular people. And they're like, well, what do you think of open banking? And the vast majority have no idea what it is and what's the value of it. So there's also this other component that is education and what value provides to you. And why do people need it? So that's the thing.
Yeah, that's always an interesting thing, though. If you went into the street and people didn't have them yet and tried to sell people on the idea that they should put plugs in their house, I mean, that would be a hard sell, right? You should be going to put these ugly things all over your house in random locations. And if your kids stick their fingers in, they can get electrocuted. It's like, this sounds like a bad thing. But it turns out the use cases are pretty good. So we all just kind of do that. This is like, this is the way things work. Good. Okay, so let's get into a few quick fire questions just to get to know you a little bit better. So number one is, what do you think is overhyped right now?
You know what? I thought about this for a while. I think it's been a little bit on the back end now, but Web3 still kind of floats around. It's not really the new hype is AI, and I think I'm optimistic about AI, but there's also a bunch of hype about crypto, which I'm not really on the crypto bandwagon, so those things.
There is a second coming of the crypto bros just now, isn't there? So crypto's the thing going forward. Is there anything that you think is interesting, but people just don't talk about enough?
I think to the point of like open banking and data exchange and information converting, data to information, as you said a bit earlier in the call, people don't really focus on that. And so there's all these like Gartner magic quadrants and hype and innovation cycles and whatever. But what's missing is actually just honest conversation around information and what's the value of the information. I think one thing that it's like persistent throughout the media, but also like all the social media, like the misinformation that we keep on hearing, there's misinformation and all of that. But we're not actually talking about what does it look like. I haven't really seen a good report of on aggregate, what is misinformation looking like, and what's the start of a misinformation to the conclusion of something happening, like in an election or an example.
Okay, so actually like working out how misinformation works. We're talking about now. Describe your taste in interior design.
Okay, so recently my wife and I have been on a path of doing some major renos in the house. And we have started to really lean heavily to like the Nordic style, the light wood stuff, and not minimalist, but necessary minimalism.
Sounds beautiful. What's the first work thing you were really proud of?
Landing a major airline back in my startup days. Given it was a global roaming solution, took me 6 months to land a major global airline as a client. That was a lot of fun. The only big downside is when we finally landed that, they invited us to fly out to meet the executives in Asia. It was an Asian airline. And my boss told me I could not go. And that was like, what? I worked on this.
I feel the injustice for you from here. This is like, that is terrible. Good. Okay. So the final one, some people get offended by it. Some people love it. On a scale of 1 to 10, how weird are you?
I wouldn't say 10, but I would say 7. I'd say I'm more on the weird side. That's a quick answer. And the longer answer is, I'm interested by the randomest thing. Like as an example, if I'm talking to you, and I'll always make sure to look you up on LinkedIn, as in ideally your profile exists. And then I'll look into okay, where are you based? Okay, this is a city I've never heard of. Look, I'll open up Google Maps and be like, okay, this city is located somewhere over there. And so I'll do a little bit of that's the kind of quirkiness that I do behind the scenes. And I don't know if it's valuable or not, but I invest the 5 minutes.
Great, thanks very much. That is really good. That is us, I think. As we close out another episode, make sure to like, subscribe, and follow us on our social channels. Want to access Label Sessions for your brand? Whether you want to build new products, access world-class mentors for your team, or reinvent the way you attract talent into your business, visit Label Sessions to find out more.